Welcome to the Work Camper Show, a podcast devoted to helping you discover how to finance your RV travel dreams. I'm Steve Anderson, the president of Work Camper News. Each one of our episodes will either introduce you to people who are already living the RV lifestyle or to opportunities to work short-term jobs. You'll also learn how to hit the road the right way and make the most of every opportunity. Now let's turn over today's show to your host, Greg Gerber.
Thanks, Steve. Today we're going to talk with an RVing expert who has some tips and suggestions for taking the stress and hassle out of setting up an RV. Today's episode is sponsored by The Dreamer's Journey, a new online course and community produced by Work Camper News. Life is way too short to keep your dreams on hold, so don't be held back by fear because you were designed for more. Get started in the RV lifestyle the right way with this comprehensive guide. For a monthly subscription fee, people can participate in two online webinars every week to learn things like what type of RV to buy, goal setting, how to budget for the adventure, developing a positive mindset, where to call home, and how to find a job or start a mobile business. All online events will be recorded for watching anytime. Subscribers can also join an open question and answer session each month. For more information, visit www.rvdreamersjourney.com. John Huggins and his wife Kathy founded the group Living the RV Dream. They had been full-timers for quite some time and were the pioneers in creating online communities. The couple also served as work campers nearly the entire time they were on the road, so they are very well experienced in setting up and taking down an RV and getting ready to hit the road again. The key is to develop a routine, and that starts with formulating a checklist that is specific to your rig and your equipment. There are a lot of online gurus who develop checklists, and a quick Google search will point you to several good starters. But those checklists still need to be customized based on your own equipment. Like John says, it really starts with doing your homework, knowing what you've got and what you're buying, and knowing what else you need to buy in order to be safe. In this interview, John describes the routine that he followed in setting up their campsites, but he also shares stories he's heard from other people. Unfortunately, most people have to learn the hard way by making mistakes. It is very easy to get distracted and forget a step or two. As a full-time RVer myself, I learned some important lessons the hard way. For example, always take the towed car out of neutral and ensure the brake is on whenever unhooking the vehicle from the RV, and especially if the campsite isn't perfectly level. I couldn't hold on to my 3,000-pound car for too long as it started rolling away, and with a supplemental brake sitting in the driver's side floor, I learned it wasn't as easy as jumping into the moving car and applying the brake. John offers a lot of great advice, and it starts with talking to future employers about your RV site before you even arrive to start the job. It sounds like John and I jumped right into the interview without a formal welcome, but to give us his advice, sprinkled with a lot of personal experience, please welcome John Huggins, the co-founder of Living the RV Dream, to the show.
It really starts with do your homework. Know what you've got, what you're buying. Know what else you need to buy with it to be safe. And I've got it all in this little book that I wrote. But homework, homework, homework. Once you've done that, you've bought your RV. I would never, ever think about hooking or unhooking without someone else with me. A spotter.
Why is that?
A spotter. Somebody outside while I'm inside, or somebody checking off my list for me. Because it's a process. From the time that you pull into the campground, get your site, now you've got to get out of the truck or the car, go look at that site. Is it level? Are there trees overhead that are going to interfere with you? Where's the hookups? Do you have enough length of sewer line to get from where you're going to be to that outlet? Hugely important before you ever try to back into a space or even pull front ways into it.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in parks where with a motorhome where I needed 45 feet of sewer hose. and the rig was only 40 feet long.
I was at the Coney Park with one of those. Yes.
Yeah. Same with electrical. I had to buy a 50 amp extension to reach some electrical. Water hose, pretty easy. That's cheap. It's easy to buy. But these are things you just have to look for.
And I would imagine that when people are work camping, the campgrounds are giving them sort of the sites that are farther away and might require more distance for the hoses and things like that anyway. So this is something
work campers... You never get the prime sites, that's for sure. Yeah. You never get the pull-throughs. You're always backing in. But work campers who've been out here a while typically know what to do and how to do it too.
Mm-hmm. We're trying to reach the new work campers who are just getting into the lifestyle and for the experienced ones and reminding them of all this stuff. Yep, exactly.
Yeah. Well, for a prospective work camper, when you're discussing the job with the employer, ask a lot of questions. What kind of site will I be in? Can you tell me about how far away the hookups will be? How level is it going to be? Am I going to need a lumber yard to level up, which I always carried with me? Those sort of questions, they shouldn't be offended for you asking them.
When it comes to leveling, I've seen, and I'm sure you have as well, some of the most dangerous and weird configurations where both of the tires are off the ground and or one side of the vehicle is off the ground. Yeah. Is that safe?
No. I hear so-called experts will tell you, if you've got a motorhome and the front wheels are off the ground, it's okay. Those jacks can handle it. Sure they can. But now your suspension is dangling.
Right.
You've got weight just pressing down on that suspension that shouldn't be there full time.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention, we have wind in this country. Those jacks are spindly little things. You're much more susceptible to wind if you're up on jacks than if you're down on the ground.
Well, I would imagine if everything is up as well, and you know, it's like, oh my gosh, there's a buffalo in our campground, and everybody rushes forward to look out the front window, that extra weight could bend the jack or cause it to shift just a little bit.
All the jacks that are in the new RVs aren't always as robust as they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine that.
Right.
Yeah, I've seen the rear wheels of a diesel motorhome off the ground. Well, where's your brake on a diesel motorhome, your emergency parking brake? On the rear axle.
Never
thought
of
that. So you're off the ground. Oh, that's a terrible disaster waiting to happen.
That's right. So do you need to chock the wheels? Do you recommend that?
For trailers, absolutely.
Okay.
Because you're disconnecting that truck, which is the real stability.
Good point.
So yes, absolutely chocks. And for anybody who's got dual axles, they have those X chocks that go between the wheels.
Yes.
Not even on the ground. They're wonderful. And they're not that expensive.
Okay. So they kind of separate. They look like an X, right? And they separate. And those are made for dual axles?
Well, the X chock goes between the tires. Mm-hmm. It contacts the tread on both sides.
Okay.
Yeah.
But
regular wheel chocks are fine too. I carried them with mm-hmm. me, depending on where I was and what the hookup was. If I was on a slope, I would chock the rear wheel.
Okay.
If I was lifting the front end up a little bit, I'd chock the rear wheel.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a small lumber yard of different lengths and stuff, and I had plastic things because campgrounds aren't level for the most part.
Right. So did you have a preference between plastic and wood?
No.
No? Okay. Just anything to connect the tire
what
to
I
the
can
ground.
Drive up on, so my wheels are some way connected with the ground. But I've seen some spindly, I've seen some blocks that are too small.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's common sense.
There are some configurations in campgrounds where you've got the levelers fully extended and you're still not level. Is it okay to bring them down again and then put a bunch of wood underneath it to raise it up and then go to maximum, it's still okay as long as you're...
I wouldn't go to maximum. Mm-hmm. I would put enough wood under them. If it's a motorhome, I don't want to lift the wheels off the ground.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's same thing with a trailer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you'd ever really need to lift a trailer's wheels off the ground. If it's that unlevel, you need to find another space.
Yeah, which might not be possible if you are work camping. So we gotta teach them how to do this. Okay, so you arrive at the campground, and the first thing you do is you level the vehicle.
No, the first thing you do is get out of your car and look at the site.
Okay, and why is that?
Because you want to look, are there overhead trees that are going to give you a problem backing in? Look and see where the sewer is. How much latitude sideways do you have? You certainly don't want, and I've had this happen in a narrow campground where the sewer hookup was right next to the tire. Well, it was actually underneath my slide out.
Wow.
I mean, it was doable, but it was a real pain.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to look at these things and try and figure, okay, where do I want to park? And the other thing you want to look at is, I'm on a street, hopefully. Have I got enough room to pull forward and do the back end maneuver I need to do?
Okay.
Almost always you do, but you definitely need a spotter.
Mm-hmm. Right. Do you need walkie-talkies?
Some people use them and love them. Some people use cell phones and love them. Kathy and I developed hand signals that were absolutely foolproof. But your spotter always has to be within your rear view mirror.
Okay.
If they get behind you, right, and she did that to me, I stopped dead.
Mm-hmm.
And I waited.
Right.
And then she'd come back out, and then I'd wait for her. But I wouldn't do it without a spotter.
Okay.
No way.
Okay. And does the campground provide that sometimes?
Huh?
Will the campground provide a spotter sometimes if you're traveling by yourself?
Some do, some don't. Sometimes when they escort you to the site, the escort guy will get out. And Kathy and I had a... You never know how much that guy knows, and usually they don't. So we tried to be polite about it. So I tell you what, we've been doing this a lot of years. Why don't you let us do it and watch us? But other people, help me. I need the help.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And when you check in, ask, can somebody help me back, especially singles?
Right.
A lot of single work campers.
It is hard as you're a single. Trying to maneuver that without running over the pedestals or driving up onto the concrete or anything like that. Yes.
I ran over a hose bib once. It was bad.
Mm-hmm.
I was just pulling in there to be a work camper and I already destroyed something.
Oh no.
And part of my job was, we had a lot of foreign campers come in. They rented RVs and came in. So they'd hook up and not unhook, but leave, mm-hmm. go sightseeing in a rented RV. And there'd be a power line and a water line dragging behind them. It was ugly.
Ouch.
So I replaced a lot of hose bibs.
Mm-hmm.
I know all about it. It's funny now, but
right.
That's the other thing. When if you're backing into a space, you will have an audience.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, you will have an audience. If you're in a big motorhome and you're towing a car, the best place to unhook that car is as soon as you get in the campground. You'll have an audience, so you better know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So the moral of that is practice, practice, practice. Kathy and I practiced hooking up and unhooking that car in a parking lot several times, to where we could get it down to very, very quickly do it. The one time we got in a spot we couldn't get out of with the car hooked up, because you can't back up with a car and a motorhome. And we had pulled into a Cabela's, and we didn't realize they were having some big festival in their parking lot. We got just too far and couldn't go any farther, couldn't back up. So we had to very quickly get out and unhook the car, get it out of the way. And Kathy's out there directing traffic while I'm backing into traffic. It was fun.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine.
So, practice, unhooking and hooking up a trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Even more so.
Right.
And I've got a very, I'm going to read one for you.
Okay.
One of the guys that I used as reference for my book was very, very well versed in hooking up travel trailers, especially where they have weight distributing hitches. And if you've ever seen one, it's two steel bars that are actually pressed into the hitch part on the truck. They have a slot there. They push in, and then you have to torque those bars up, and there's a piece of chain on the end that hooks onto the hitch on the trailer. And it's an interesting thing to see. Mm-hmm. Once again, practice.
I think I remember you saying to develop sort of a routine when you're doing the hooking up and the unhooking of the car. To prevent.
Yeah, you do the same thing every time.
In the same order.
Yeah, start with a checklist if you have to.
Mm-hmm.
We did, because unhooking and hooking our car was easy. But if somebody came up and talked to you and you'd lose concentration, which is something else, you just say, excuse me, I'd love to talk to you as soon as I get done with this. But yeah, the same thing in the same way, because then you don't forget stuff.
Right.
I mean, hooking up a trailer is pretty easy, but if you get distracted, you'll forget to plug in the electrical and you won't have any lights.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll be dragging along the street disintegrating itself.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
If you don't follow the tip that the last thing you do once you're hooked up is to send your spotter back and test the lights
mm-hmm.
and the brake lights. And pretty soon they'll say, oh, we don't have any. Maybe we forgot to plug that in.
Oh, that's right. When you're doing the car, hooking up the car. Mm-hmm.
So everything's a process.
Okay.
And a hugely important one, too, because if you do this wrong, you may be able to tow your trailer a ways, but it ain't going to tow correctly.
Mm-hmm. Before it locks up?
Any number of bad things can happen.
Yep.
Trailer sway is an absolute recipe for disaster.
I remember that trailer sway is a big one, right?
And with an anti-sway hit setup, which is adds another couple of $100 to the price you didn't expect to pay, and a properly set up weight distributing hitch, these things won't happen to you.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you pay your money and take your choice. But I've watched people hook up and unhook trailers, and the husband and wife are screaming at each other, and it's ugly.
Mm-hmm.
If, but they don't have a process.
Right.
Oh, we got to go do this. Let's just do it. No. Let's look at our checklist and go through it line by line.
So do you recommend just borrowing someone else's checklist and then modifying it?
Sure.
Okay.
There's lots of them on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
I think I had a link to about 100 different checklists that people use. I wasn't going to print them all in the book,
mm-hmm.
but yeah, I don't own my website anymore, but all the stuff that was in it is still there
okay. And
still available. Most of the links are still there. I sold it to Robert Morales,
mm-hmm.
you know, traveling Robert.
Right.
Good guy.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So once you're backed into your site and you're leveled and all of that, then you have to go in and set up the sewer and the electricity. When it comes to electrical, is there any special considerations there?
Oh, yeah. The very first thing, another thing you have to buy that you didn't expect to buy, is a very simple and cheap little electrical. It's about half the size of your fist. You plug it in to the 110-volt side, which every hookup has one, and it'll tell you a little bit about the condition of what's coming into that post. There are lights, and if you get two greens, everything is fine. There's nothing reversed. You take that little gadget, you plug it into an adapter, and then put it into the 30 amp side.
Mm-hmm.
Now you can test the 30 amp hookup. 50 amp hookup, you have to learn how to use a voltmeter.
Okay.
So you
wouldn't just plug in your surge protector, which would have...
Many people do that.
Okay.
And there's different... People say, I've got to have a surge protector. Well, they sell surge protectors for $100.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they do is protect you against surges. They don't check the electrical. They don't cut the power off if your voltage goes too high or too low. None of that. You need what's called an EMS, electrical management system, built in as a surge protector.
That costs a couple hundred dollars more, but it's worth the price, isn't it?
You can get one for $300 or so from almost any of the major people that make them. Progressive mm-hmm. makes a good one. SurgeGuard makes a good one.
One thing that I've noticed, and maybe you can elaborate on that, is that newbies will sometimes get to a campsite and just immediately plug in their line from their electrical cord from the RV right into the pedestal, without having that surge protector in there, which is kind of silly to begin with. But even with the surge protector, what I've seen them do is they plug in the surge protector and then plug in the trailer connection, which I don't know if that's a smart idea, because if there is a problem,
it's not helping you.
Right.
If you're not already hooked up to that surge protector,
mm-hmm.
then press it in, then it starts to work and protects your trailer.
And pressing it in is important too, right? You can't rock it in, or should not rock it in. Like, you
no,
know,
it should be pressed. And right. I've stepped on mine many, many times.
Mm-hmm.
I never had a problem with it.
Okay.
But I tested 50 amp with a voltmeter from most of the time,
mm-hmm.
Because I know how.
Okay.
I would write any RVer should learn how to use a voltmeter for so many things.
Okay.
Chasing 12 volt systems around inside. It's just one of those skills that you should learn.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a fellow by the, you know him, Mike Sokol.
Mm-hmm. Yes. The hot skin.
Well, that, but he is the RV electrical safety guru. He's got a website, he's got a series on RV electricity where he'll teach you everything you need to know in videos. Absolutely the right guy. The hot skin is something else that once I went through the inspector class, I already had the tester. I did it every time after that.
Okay.
I would test after I hooked up to a campground, I'd test for hot skin.
Do you ever have a problem that you uncovered before you had one? Okay.
Not in my rig, but when we were doing the training, one of the guys, we did each other's rigs, and one of the guys did have. And we tested, and yes, there was about a 30-volt hot skin. And he chased it around inside and found the loose ground.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, yeah, cool. It's, again, this is upper-level stuff,
mm-hmm.
but this is where Mike Sokol excels in teaching this stuff.
Okay.
Okay. As do all the folks down there in Texas. I forget what they call that now.
Mm-hmm.
What's the
National RV Training Academy.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Okay. When it comes to electrical, are you able to use one of, what do they call them? The dog bones, where you can connect a 50 amp to a 30 amp cord. Is that safe to do?
All dog bones aren't created equal.
Okay.
They're almost all made in China. Some are made better than others. So when you've got your dog bone in your hand, flex it.
Mm-hmm.
And then look and see if the insulation is coming out of either of the plug ends.
Okay.
Not a good thing.
Okay.
So I wouldn't use one where I could see the wires.
Is it safe to use a 30 amp or to modify or adapt a 50 amp power cord to be plugged into a 30 amp site? It's sure. Okay to do that? Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Because when you do that, a 50 amp cord, a 50 amp hookup is actually two 50 amp hookups.
Right.
50 amp is really 100. But anyway, you're hooking two separate lines. When you put the dog bone in, you're isolating one of those lines, and that's all you're using.
Mm-hmm.
So your 30 amp rig will be hooked up to 50 amps, but you're not going to be able to draw more than 30 amps before your own circuit breakers are going to trip.
Okay. So there's not a problem with taking a 30 amp trailer and trying to plug it into a 50 amp connection?
I'll be honest with you. I would rather do that. Even if I had a 30 amp connector in the box at the campground, I've run into so many bad plugs physically that are in that pedestal. I've rewired a lot of them over the years that I was a work camper. For some reason, those 30 amp plug and jack connections get loose so easily. Once they get loose, you start getting arcing and sparking inside.
That's scary too.
It is. It's very scary. And when you pull your plug out, you look and your ground connection isn't there anymore.
Yeah.
It's arc welded to the other side in the side of the pedestal.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Yeah. So these are things that I just automatically look for. My background is in electronics and electrical, so I know these things.
Mm-hmm.
But I would rather put a 50 amp dog bone in.
Or a 30 amp system.
So the dog bone is good. I mean, you still got a 30 amp plug in and jack there, and run that way.
Okay. Okay. When it comes to water and you're hooking up everybody knows that you shouldn't use a traditional just water hose. You should use a specific water hose for drinking water,
for potable
water. And carry a separate water hose, a green hose, for flushing your tanks and things like that, right? You don't ever want to use the same one.
Absolutely.
Would you recommend sanitizing the connection on the water spigot at the campground before you hooked up?
I spray them.
Spray them. What did you use?
I had a little spray bottle that was in the compartment where I'd pull out the hose and the sewer line and stuff. And it was a bleach mixture.
Okay.
I would spray that hose bib pretty thoroughly. I would spray each. When I put a hose away, I clean them out anyhow.
Mm-hmm.
And when I roll them up, I hook them together. So there's no junk gets in, but not all people do that.
Right.
Or you can buy, dummy end that will screw onto your hose.
Mm-hmm.
And a plug at the other end if you want to do it that way. I never did. I just screwed them together.
What about quick connect connection things? Are those okay?
I guess they are.
All right.
So, until they're not.
Until they're not.
Well, I mean, it's yet another mechanical thing you're adding
mm-hmm.
that can go wrong.
Right.
Go wrong.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I don't like them. I don't care for them.
Okay.
Although I do use quick connect gas fittings
mm-hmm.
because they're very robust.
Okay. But LP gas, you mean?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, I had when we first bought our rig, we also bought a catalytic heater,
mm-hmm.
which I think is the safest, best heaters in the world to use. And the dealer sent me to another place and said, these guys will plummet in for you at a reasonable price. And they did. It was in Arizona, as a matter of fact. And what they did is they tapped off of our stove and ran a line down near the floor and came in through a panel that was blank
mm-hmm.
and put a quick disconnect fitting in there. And then on the end of the hose that was attached to the catalytic heater, I had the other end. So I just had to press that in and it would lock.
Okay. Okay.
Then I always knew I had a good secure connection.
Okay. For sewer, are there any considerations there?
Wait a minute. We didn't get done with the water yet.
Okay.
I would never, ever hook up water to my rig without a water pressure regulator that was adjustable and that had a gauge that I knew was pretty accurate. So I could see how much pressure was going in. Some campgrounds have over 100 PSI water pressure.
It's a fire hydrant. Yes.
Yeah. And I always ran mine around 50.
Okay.
They're tested to 80, but I'm not going to go anywhere near test pressure.
Do you need an elbow?
I'm sorry?
An elbow? It's a metal fitting that looks like an elbow, and it just...
I used one, but it wasn't a 90-degree elbow. I used a 45-degree elbow because you want the water to come in at the pressure you use.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if you got 50 outside, you'd like to have that much hitting the shower head so you get a really good shower.
Okay.
Well, any elbows reduce the flow.
Okay.
So I'd use the 45s for that. Also, the hose that I used was not cheap half-inch hose.
Mm-hmm.
It was 5/8. Much better flow through a 5/8 inch hose. Not a lot of more money.
Okay.
And they're available at many, many places where you can get camping accessories. That's as far as I'll go with where you should buy it.
I know where you're coming from. Yes.
Yeah. I don't want to give Marcus any more money.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good to note as well.
Yeah.
Do you need a regulator and an elbow, or is a regulator good?
You've got an inlet
mm-hmm.
on the side of the RV. And while I'm talking about that, I'll mention there's a little, there's a valve inside there. It's a check valve that can go bad. And what it does, it doesn't let water come back the other way.
Okay.
So.
What are those called?
Pardon?
What are those called? Reverse flow protectors or something? Okay.
Well, many of the campgrounds have those. They're anti-siphon valves. Many, many campgrounds have those already on the hose bib.
Okay.
I carried a couple of them with me just in case, but mm-hmm. I used them too because they don't want what's in your rig going back into theirs.
Right. Okay. That makes sense.
But always use the water regulator. And when you leave your campground, if you're getting in your car and leaving the campground, turn the water off.
Fully. Don't let it drip.
Really bad things can happen inside an RV because, especially with the quality of build that we're getting, you don't know how well tightened those fittings are inside.
Mm-hmm.
You may not have any leaks until you leave and come back and there's water running out the front door and down the steps.
So you turn off water to the rig?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's an easy enough thing to do as long as it's something you remember mm-hmm. every time you leave.
Okay. Okay.
The water tank, if you use it, we very rarely used our onboard water tank because we mostly hooked up where we had hookups. But I always carried enough in there to where when I'm traveling, I can flush the toilet and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Sanitize your water tank at least once a year, if not twice a year.
Okay.
A quarter cup of bleach per 40 gallons.
Okay.
Or you can actually pour that mixture down your hose that's mm-hmm. going into the rig and quick hook it up again and turn the water on. It'll get in there.
Yeah. Okay.
Fill the tank up all the way. You'll know because you'll open up your water valves.
Mm-hmm.
And let it sit for a couple of hours. Flush it all back out. Fill it all back up. And then keep flushing until you don't smell the bleach smell.
Okay.
And you're sanitized.
And you need to do that at least once a year?
At least.
Okay. Okay.
Some of the water that we get at these campgrounds is really less than stellar mm-hmm. quality. I also had a I had a two-stage water filter that went in right after the pressure regulator. I had a water filter. It sat inside the compartment, and it was a sediment filter and also a carbon block filter.
Mm-hmm.
And that cleaned up the water quite a bit.
Okay. Well, many of the campgrounds, they don't get city water. They're just coming from a well. And so that's problematic, too, for people who are concerned about their health. Bad. Right. Yeah, exactly.
It's okay to shower in most of the time. For a long time, I used a water softener, too. But I got tired of pouring salt in that thing every other day, so I stopped using it.
Right. Right.
But it worked well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But, it depends how finicky you are about your water.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And you said the treatment was how much bleach per?
A quarter cup of bleach per 40 gallons of water. if you want to flush a lot more, then you use a little more.
Okay.
But that's about the right measurement. We had a 90-gallon freshwater tank, or 100, I forget.
Mm-hmm.
So I just put a half a cup of bleach in it and flushed it.
Okay. Very good. When it comes to sewer, hooking that up, you know, a lot of newbies will just pop the thing on the connection in the campground and open the valves
and hope for the best.
And that's right. Exactly. What things should people be consider or mindful of when making that sewer connection?
Well, first thing you do when you start messing with your sewer hookup, put gloves on.
Mm-hmm.
And, I wouldn't wear really good shoes. You never know what might happen.
Right. Yeah.
I have thrown away a pair of shoes or two, but anyhow, definitely wear gloves. I had a clear elbow that came out of the main valve. It was made by Rhino, that same company that makes Rhino Flex hoses, but it was a clear plastic that screwed right on there. So I could see what the color and consistency of what was coming out was.
Okay.
Would tell me when it was running clear, I knew that I was flushed properly. Anyway, then I hooked the sewer hose up to that. Then I had a slinky, which would keep the sewer hose up off the ground. Most states now require that. And then I had a very secure connection into the dump station at your campsite. Most of them, they have a standpipe with a cover on it. You unscrew the cover, and hopefully you've got something to screw into that hooks up to your sewer line.
Mm-hmm.
Just sticking the sewer line down there is a really dumb thing to do.
Why is that?
It's an invitation to the black water dance.
The black water dance.
Because you get enough pressure, and that thing's just going to whoop, pop right out of there.
Mm-hmm.
And now you've got a mess to clean up.
Okay.
Including throwing your shoes away.
Right. Okay.
That's why I said that.
Good point.
But always, always have a secure, and some of these fittings at campgrounds are threaded.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay.
Thus, the rubber sewer donut.
The donut.
Is a funnel, by the way, we were trying to think of. It's a funnel-shaped piece of very heavy, hard rubber that will press in there. And you put your attachment into that, so it's tight.
Do you have tight. I know some people put bricks or something on top of that. Is that recommended?
I would.
Okay.
If I'm worried about it popping out in any way, shape, or form. Now, they make a wonderful gadget, and you can make it at home. You take two old sweat socks, fill both of them full of rocks, and tie them together, and hang it over that connection.
That makes sense.
Yeah, man.
That way you don't have to worry about the brick falling off either.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
Those things will stay there.
Okay.
I guess they're ecology friendly.
And, since work campers tend to be long-term residents at the campgrounds, do you recommend keeping the valves open all the time? No.
Hopefully everybody should know this. I never kept either one of them open. I waited until I knew when my gray water was full. It's pretty easy to tell. Because when your toilet starts burping, your gray water tank is full. Okay. And so is your black. Anyway, I'd empty the gray water as needed, and I'd save it up for a day or two before I knew I was going to have to empty the black tank. We'd go easily a week before we had to empty the black tank.
Mm-hmm.
And we did everything in our bathroom. We didn't throw toilet paper in a can or anything like that. It went down there. Well, why not? It's what it's for.
I know.
That's, use the right toilet paper.
Right. I would never put it in a can. So.
Well, a lot of people do.
Do they really? Oh, my goodness.
Because they want to use oh-so-soft, very thick, cushy toilet paper. Well, okay, fine for you.
Okay.
For me, Scott's 1000 was perfectly soft, and I used more than a few sheets than usual of it, and I was happy.
The key is to make sure it's one ply. and environmentally friendly.
Very simple test.
Yeah.
Take two pieces of whatever toilet paper you, you know, can disconnect them, throw them in a mason jar full of water, shake it up.
Mm-hmm.
Within 5 minutes, if it's not all shredded up, you get the wrong toilet paper.
Okay.
That's the easy test.
That's good.
You do not, absolutely do not need to use RV toilet paper.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you like
spending money.
Marcus a whole lot more money than he ought to have.
Exactly. That's right.
Scotch is the cheapest out there, and it's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people used Angel Soft. They said it was good, too. I never did, but
that's
just me.
Okay.
There are some just really awful things that can happen around that sewer system if you don't do your homework, study up a little bit. By all means, buy our book, and not just because I need the money, but it's all in there. All these things happen to people, and it's all, and here's what I mean. Certainly, having a nice, stable hookup is first.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want it popping out. You don't want it pulling off the business end of your outlet valve. You have to check that when you pull that plunger, hopefully when you do, it's going to stop and the stuff's going to come out. Sometimes you're going to pull that handle right off.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Now you need a pair of pliers until you can get a new one. Sometimes those valves leak. I never had big problems with them, but occasionally I did. And what that means is if that knife valve, be it gray or black, has a little leak around it, that leak is going to go right down to the cap you've got on the end of that outlet. So when you walk up and just take that thing off, you could get greeted with about a quart of sewage.
The Blackwater Dance.
Right in your hand.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep, I remember that.
To fix that, then this is another friend of mine, Ray Burris from Love Your RV. Ray installed another knife valve right there.
Okay.
It was a screw-on knife valve. And there are a couple of kinds of these, but with the clear section there, you can see if there's a mess there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, you can't because he's got the knife valve there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always clear. So take the end off, hook the hose up, then pull the one knife valve and see if anything comes out. Okay. And you'll know if you've got a leak in the others.
Okay.
And then pull the others.
Okay.
It's about a $20 screw-on fix. Very cheap and easy.
And you wouldn't pull both valves at once, right?
I wouldn't.
No.
I always, always, always will pull the black valve first. Let all that sludge come out of there until I see that that's done. While I'm doing that, I have a line hooked up. I had a flush system built into the RV. Many now do. And I had a gray hose hooked up, and I would flush that black tank while I was letting it run out. So that flusher was spraying the inside of the tank. And when I saw the water run clear, I turned the flusher off. And then I closed the, no, I didn't close the black valve either. I opened the gray valve, and then some of that gray water splashed back up onto the black side, which is good. It's an extra flush.
Right.
But all the gray came out.
And sometimes the gray water coming out of the tank at such high speed, especially when the tank is full, creates a suction that helps pull more stuff out of the black tank. Right.
Absolutely.
Okay.
But once that's all done, and all your flushing is all done, close the valves back up and wait till the next time. I will say one thing about flushing the black tank if you're not careful. If you're all done and you've shut the black valve and you've got water going into the tank, and I've done this many times because I wanted to fill the tank with water and then let it flush out. It's a great procedure. However, if you get distracted while that's going on, and you hear a groaning sound inside your RV, that's the valve inside your toilet telling you, I got a lot of pressure down here and I'm about to blow.
I remember doing that. And sometimes you'd go to because if you're using the thing to flush your tank and you go in and press on the pedestal or the pedal to open the tank like you're going to flush your toilet, all of a sudden, kaboom, you get a geyser
If you hear that groaning, never, ever, ever hit that flush pedal.
Right.
But if you don't hear the groaning, what also can happen, and I've seen this twice, is that water is going to go up the vent and it's going to come out the roof vent.
Like in the movie RV.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you remember
then
that.
Then you're going to have your white roof ain't going to be white anymore, and you're going to have some overflow coming down the sides of your rig.
A little geyser.
Fun job to clean up.
Okay.
It's not a geyser.
Uh-huh.
But it's coming out of there.
Okay.
So if you're flushing your black tank with the tank valve closed, pay attention.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's where distraction is important. Right.
And don't trust those tank valve reading things, because most of them are not worth a damn. There's a very cheap accessory you can buy at any hardware store that's a flow meter.
Okay.
And you put flow meter in line, and oh, I've got 40 gallons in there. Okay. Ooh, I'll turn this off and then whoop, flush it right on out.
I never would have thought of that, John.
$10.
My goodness, that would have saved me a lot of problem. Because as a single, I was constantly running outside to turn the water on and running inside to make sure it wasn't leaking and back and forth and back and forth. And yeah, so that would have been a good addition. So thanks. Yeah,
absolutely a good investment.
Mm-hmm.
Along with the water thing, I kept an assortment of Y valves if I needed to run two lines, which I did almost all the time. And I had an extra water regulator, and I always kept extra stuff around. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Never, ever, ever buy plastic Y valve. You need to do your homework. Read my book. Look at videos. Anything you can, because you can get in deep, deep trouble with black water.
Yes.
You're going to create a mess. And if you're a worker in the campground and you do that, they're going to wonder, should I have hired this person or this couple or not?
Right. You really could be up shit creek.
And there's no paddles up there.
Yeah. What's your book title? You want to be a full-time RVer?
You want to be an RVer.
So you want to be an RVer.
And enjoy the RV lifestyle. Yep. And at the work camper rendezvous, they have that book and the other one. So you want to be a work camper.
Mm-hmm.
You have them available for sale.
And you wrote both of them. Okay.
Well, a lot of the work camper stuff is in here, but it goes into way more detail in
right.
a separate book.
Okay.
Yeah.
Super. What about slide outs? Things to consider when you're pushing them out or bringing them in?
Do what your manufacturer tells you to do.
Okay.
Many times they don't. If you don't know what to do, always, always, always level first
mm-hmm.
before you put a slide out.
And so even if you're pulling into a Walmart for an overnight, don't put your slide out if you're not level, because you may have a problem bringing it in.
If you're level.
Mm-hmm.
If you're level, put it out.
Okay.
I would not advise putting jacks down in a Walmart parking lot.
Right. Right.
It's just, you don't know how soft that asphalt is. So, put yourself out a little. Do you have to put that slide out? Some mm-hmm. people do. I did not need to. We could get to the bed, the fridge, everything with the slide in.
Okay.
Some rigs can't.
Mm-hmm.
But always, always level first.
Okay.
Then put the slides out.
Okay. And is that where checking the site first comes in handy? So you make sure that you are, 3 feet away from the tree before you extend your slide out, right?
I had a yardstick with the measure of how deep that slide was.
Mm-hmm.
So I would, before I would put the slide out, I'd put that alongside the slide out and push it all the way down to make sure nothing, and look up, that's where you're going to have the problem.
Okay. Mm-hmm. With branches and things like that. Right.
Find out how deep your slide is and have a piece of string with a knot in it or something, but mm-hmm. know where that measurement is.
Yep.
Know how tall you are with, including the air conditioner.
Mm-hmm.
Measure that.
Yep.
It's not hard to do. If you get up on the roof and you put a fairly long, thin piece of 2x2 or something, and then drop a line down from that to the ground, have it tied to it. Your partner down at the other end is going to hold that. And then when you get back down, you measure the length of that string. That's how tall your area is.
Yeah.
Okay. Add a foot to that. And that's, you won't go, I want to go under anything.
Right. Less than that. Very good point.
That measurement on your windshield where you can see it.
Yep. I'd agree. I'd agree with that. Do you need to support a slide out? I mean, I've seen people doing that, putting a jack underneath the slide out.
I think it's a bad idea.
Why is that?
Because should the RV shift, which they do, you're still going to have that hard point jack and you're going to rack that slide mechanism.
Okay.
Which can cause, geez, how many possible problems, you know, let's count the ways. Mm-hmm. I would never do that.
And
they should make them so the slide stays where it should be.
And extend fully? You don't partially extend because you leave that gap then to let critters
if
and
you partially extend your slide, then your seals aren't going to work.
Right.
Water is going to come in. Bugs are going to come in. It's not a smart thing to do.
Okay. And then before you retract your slide out, it's important to check the top to make sure there's not any branches on it.
If you have a slide on it, which is a pretty smart thing to have, get up on a ladder and look under there. If you've got water, there's a very simple way to clear that. And most of them, if you have a big storm, it's going to go under there and end up on the roof of the slide out. Before you pull that slide in, bring your rig down off the jacks. It's okay to do that. And then raise the front jack a little bit. All that water is going to run out the backside.
That's smart. Okay.
Then level the rig again and bring the slide out in.
Okay. I never did that. So I would always bring the slide, but I had the awning covers. So I would bring the thing in and get a shower would be coming off.
Yeah, right
of
on your head because that one's right behind you. Right. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, you've been there, done that. Okay.
Yeah.
Super.
Well, that's how I learned this, you know, just, you don't even have to come down off the jacks. If you've got enough slack in your front jacks, run it up and they'll come out. Same thing with a trailer.
Okay.
If you jack up the front end and you've got five slide outs, they're all going to drain.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And it doesn't need to be like feet, only a couple of inches just to create enough gravity.
It, you know, water's going to find the path of least resistance and it's going to go downhill. Just like what comes out of your black tank goes downhill.
Yeah. Okay. Super. Is there anything else people need to consider when setting up?
Electrical, water, sewer.
Slide up.
Well, if you're lucky and the campground has cable TV. I always carry 2 25-foot lengths of cable with the proper connector on it. And I would try out the campground cable TV. You have to understand how to use your television's input programming because you have to program those things as they come in. But yeah, but keep those under there too.
What about?
I think I mentioned always have gloves. I had a package of rubber gloves that I would put. What I did is I had a tissue dispenser. What do you call it? A Kleenex, just a plastic thing. Well, I would dump the gloves into that, and then I'd push it up on the side, the door of my sewer thing, and I duct tape that thing in there.
Okay.
So those gloves are always there. Boop, I pull them right out.
I never used gloves. I figured I changed enough diapers. But I know a lot of people like to. And
In this day and age, you better have a lot of gloves around.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. That's right. Jacks. Do you need any pads under the jacks?
Always.
And the levelers as well, right?
Well, jacks.
I mean, levelers, the jacks and,
for a motorhome, jacks and levelers are the same thing. But yeah, trailers, I mean, they have, there's a whole myriad of things they have. A lot of them are those scissor jack things that come down. Always have something under that. Otherwise, if you've got a soft surface there, it's going to bore right into it.
And the campgrounds are going to get a little testy if
you
leave and they find a bunch of rivets in their campsite.
It was very simple for me. I went to a hardware store and I bought a 10-foot length of 2 by 6 foot, 2 inch by 12 inch. It was an expensive piece of wood, but 2 by 12 pressure treated lumber.
Mm-hmm.
And I sawed it into 1 foot lengths.
Okay.
So I had a whole bunch of 1 foot square pads.
Okay.
What I did is I took two of them and turned the grain 90 mm-hmm. degrees, screwed them together, and put a handle on one end.
Okay.
Then it was easy to shove them under where the jack, for a motorhome, you got to get down and shove them under.
Right.
The trailer here at each corner.
Okay.
But now I've got 2 inches at least,
mm-hmm.
four usually. Put your jacks down.
Okay.
Get yourself level.
Okay.
Some, now the new rigs have six. And they're actually electric jacks. Put pads on those too.
Mm-hmm.
Some, there's a company that makes one that actually permanently mounts to the foot.
Yep.
Of
snap
the
pads. Yep.
Yeah, snap on pads or something.
Mm-hmm. Snap pad.
They're pretty good as long as they're big enough to make a nice big footprint.
Right. Yes,
that's
exactly.
What you're trying to do.
Yep.
I went to a, I think it was a Thousand Trails camp. I can't remember where, but it was a gravel campsite. It was newly put gravel. My jacks went this far into the gravel. This piece was provided to me by a podcast listener named Jason Paulsell. And it's about hooking up equalizer bars on a trailer. He said, hitching up the trailer, you'll need to raise the tongue of the trailer a little higher than the hitch. Use the installed manual or electric jack to do this. Now back up the truck to the trailer very slowly so the hitch ball is centered to receive the trailer coupler. When the receiver is directly above the hitch ball, put the truck in park with the handbrake on. Lower the trailer onto the hitch ball until it's completely seated and flip the locking mechanism. Then the following sequence should occur. Using the tongue jack, electrical hopefully, raise the tongue of the trailer back up, actually taking some of the weight off your tow vehicle. I'm not suggesting you pick the rear wheels off the ground, just add a few inches of height. Insert the weight distributing spring bars, which each weigh as much as a couple of bowling balls, into the special head of the hitch stuck in the receiver of the tow vehicle. Using a trial and error method the first time or two, determine which link of the chain that's connected to the other end is the best choice to give the proper amount of torque in order to level out the tow vehicle and the trailer tongue. Paint that link purple. Hook this link of the chain over the hooks on each side of the trailer tongue. Find the piece of pipe supplied with the hitch. Usually it can be found at the last campground you visited because it was left sitting on the bumper, so buy another one. Now with all your might, using the pump as a lever, lift up on the bracket until the hook and the chain pop over the center. Insert the locking pin. This is where lifting the tongue jack helps you out. Otherwise, you'd be lifting all that weight with your own strength. This is a dangerous time. If your hand slips, that pipe will come flying back down at the speed of sound right before it breaks your arm or moves your jaw over about a foot and a half. So be very careful. Unhitching should follow the same procedure in reverse. Lift the tongue jack. Use the pipe to flip down the chain hook. This part is even more dangerous because it's hard to judge how much potential energy is stored up on the system. You can unexpectedly send that pipe into near-Earth orbit, break your jaw, or embed the pipe a foot deep in the back of your truck if you're not careful. This description is for the most commonly used setup. And the next thing he said, plug the trailer's wires into the tow vehicle's electrical outlet. And then he talks about safety chains.
But, and who was this?
Huh?
Who was
His
this?
His name is Jason Paulsell, P-A-U-L-S-E-L.
Okay.
And he was a podcast listener. I talked about this, and I said, I don't know a lot about trailers on one of our shows. And he immediately texted me and sent this thing, which was pretty good.
Okay. Cool.
And that's true. I mean, and this is in the book, by the way.
Mm-hmm. All right.
You may have a copy of my book.
I do. Yes. Yep. It's somewhere. I don't know if it's here or Wisconsin.
Well, yeah, it's also on the section in the website under towing.
Okay.
LivingTheRVDream.com.
Okay. Super.
It's all in there.
That's a good
but
point.
Yeah, that was funny, but not so funny. Same thing when hooking up a fifth wheel.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to back your truck in until that kingpin engages the fifth wheel. But this is where you need a spotter. It doesn't always hitch. Now you're going to let the trailer down off its jacks onto the hitch. What everybody I know recommends at this time, you have a spotter watching and you have the driver pulls forward, just put your truck in gear and move forward slightly. If that trailer doesn't move, that hitch isn't in, and if you keep going, you're going to get a telltale sign of dropped fifth wheel on your truck.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's not a badge of honor either.
No, that can be very expensive and ruin the gooseneck.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And what a couple of the hitch manufacturers make a grabber bar where you back in over the thing and then you lower the trailer. Now, this grabber bar is a piece of metal attached to the fifth wheel that surrounds it. And actually, if you drive forward, it'll capture the kingpin.
Okay.
So it can't drop.
Mm-hmm.
It's expensive because it's some pretty heavy welded steel, but it's right. A good thing to have.
Okay. Okay.
But that's, I've seen the trucks that have that. You know, mm-hmm. The other thing is always put the tailgate down when you're hooking up and never, ever forget to put that tailgate back up. Because as soon as you make a turn, you're going to cut a nice gouge inside the trailer and also ruin the tailgate.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, cool.
Lessons learned from people I've talked to.
That's exactly right. That's what we're trying to avoid is people having to learn those expensive lessons. Yeah. Towing a car. I mean, towing a car and hooking that up and unhooking that. That's where I found having that routine and doing the same steps in the same order was essential. Yeah. Otherwise you'd forget the little hooks or you'd forget to hook up the lights or you'd forget to whatever it might be.
Yeah, it's more important getting hooked up than unhooking, but don't let anybody disturb you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, and make sure you have a bag. I had a bag supplied by one of the manufacturers with all that tow gear in it.
Mm-hmm.
I had the chains. I had the electrical thing stuck in there. I had the pins and I had extras of almost everything.
Okay. Okay.
So it was in that bag. So Kathy and I would get on either side. I'd lower the jack. The car was close enough to where I could, spring those things out or not.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as it was hooked up, she'd go around, get in the car and pull it backwards so it locked. And she'd get out and come back and help me hooking up all the wiring.
Okay. Okay.
Because I had one more wire than most people do from the motorhome. It was a thing called a towed charge system. Mm-hmm. It was just a line from the battery that would hook into a little black box and hook into the battery. So it was charging my battery while I was rolling. That brake buddy that I had in there wasn't drawing down the car's battery.
Right. That would be very important because there are a number of times where I'd get to a destination and the battery would be dead. And that was...
Which means that your gadget isn't working either.
Right.
It requires 12 volts from the battery.
Right. And what is that device called?
TOAD?
No, a towed charge. Okay.
Yeah, I forget the name of the company. They're about $80 and it includes all the wiring and screws and everything you need.
Okay. All right.
Nice gadget.
Well, thanks, John. I really appreciate it.
You bet.
Has been very helpful. I really appreciate John Huggins making a repeat appearance on The Work Camper Show. His mind is a vault of valuable information. When setting up or tearing down a campsite, the best advice John offered was to take it slowly and develop a system. Don't let an audience or the clock rush you through your established procedures. I'm glad he talked about the dangers of raising an RV during the leveling process so the tires are off the ground. It really is a dangerous practice, and it's so easy to get hurt or cause significant damage to the RV. if the rig shifts due to wind, soft ground, gravity, or movement inside the vehicle. Whenever you're setting up or tearing down a campsite, it's funny how often people will stop by to chat or distract you in some other way. That can be really problematic if you're hooking up any vehicle to be towed. You might forget to attach a cable, ensure the car's transmission is oiled up, or make sure the tow arm is properly pinned into position. In my own experience, I have forgotten to attach the 7-point plug, the breakaway switch, the tow arm pin, and to let the car run for a few minutes before leaving. As a result, I didn't have brake lights, a tow arm swung wildly at the first turn and the car jackknifed. I also blew up my Jeep and put a gaping hole in the floor, severed the gas line and all undercarriage wires, as well as wiped out the transmission just because I forgot to run the car's engine for a few minutes after a long stop. John's advice is to practice, 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 but take time to fully understand all the equipment you have and how it works. Then develop an itemized checklist to follow until you get the hang of setting up and taking down the RV. Even then, review the checklist every time to ensure that something wasn't overlooked. John and Kathy Huggins wrote two books that are available on Amazon.com. The first, So You Want to Be an RVer, covers everything you need to know about the RV lifestyle. It goes into detail about the steps needed to set up and take down a rig. The second book is titled So You Want to Be a Work Camper and explores the details of living and working from the road. I highly recommend both books. You can also get started in the RV lifestyle the right way with Work Camper News' new RV Dreamers Journey online course and community. For a monthly subscription fee, people can participate in two online webinars every week and join an online open question and answer session each month. For more information, visit www.rvdreamersjourney.com. This episode is sponsored by the National RV Training Academy in Athens, Texas. The Academy's one-week live training or home study course will teach you everything you need to know to fix about 80% of the problems people experience with their RVs. You can also sign up for additional training to become an RV inspector, campground technician, or to provide mobile RV service. For more information, visit www.nrvta.com. That's all we have for today's show. Next time, we'll speak with a woman who just completed the RV Dreamer's Journey and ask what she thought of the training. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week on The Work Camper Show.